bird note. Deep in the forests of southern Mexico and Central America, the resplendent Quetzal is a sight to behold. And if you catch a glimpse of the bird's emerald green feathers, fiery red breast, and its striking blue tail that winds on and on, up to three times the length of its body, you might even think you've seen a flying serpent. Which is probably why the Aztecs considered this bird a representation of Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent, one of the most worshipped gods across ancient Mesoamerica. Known as Kukulkan to the Mayans, the god was associated with creation and knowledge. But no matter how sacred, resplendent Quetzals are currently considered near threatened due to a declining population. Deforestation and illegal trade are the main threats to their survival. Quetzals hold an important role in their ecosystem. As they feast on fruits like avocados and wild aguacatillo, they scatter their seeds, playing a crucial part in forest regeneration. These majestic birds prefer cloud forests, building their nests in tree cavities. Both parents share the duties of incubating the eggs and raising their young. It takes two Quetzal parents to raise a bird this magnificent. For Bird Note, I'm Lucina Melesio.
Next up on the program, we have an interview from a series we did a few years back examining traditional Chinese medicine, a series hosted by Chris Spangenberg. Today, Chris is speaking with practitioner Lena Mo. Let's just have a listen to this. Yep.
Welcome to CJSF 90.1 FM broadcasting from Vancouver Burnaby Mountain. My name is Chris Spangenberg, and I am the producer of this series of interviews you are about to hear. This is the third episode of an eight-part episodic series on traditional Chinese medicine, also known as TCM, and the traditional Chinese medicine community here in Vancouver. In the course of these interviews, I examine the local culture and practice of traditional Chinese medicine, as well as inquire into its philosophy and difference from Western medicinal practices. This series is produced for CJSF 90.1 FM's Making Time for Radio project. In this interview, I speak with Dr. Lina Ho, the principal of the International College of Traditional Chinese Medicine, which is one of the oldest schools of traditional Chinese medicine here in Vancouver. She has been with the college for 25 years now, and has been a significant figure in the donation of the school to the Buddhist Tsu-Chi Foundation. We first talk about her personal background and what led her to become a doctor of Chinese medicine. Next, we talk about her experiences working at the International College of the Traditional Chinese Medicine and the various capacities she has held. Following that, we discussed the donation of the college to the Tsu-Chi Foundation and the history behind the donation. We end the interview talking about Tsu-Chi's initiative to host scholarships for First Nations students to study traditional Chinese medicine. My name is Chris Spangenberg, and you are listening to an interview between me and Dr. Lina Ho here on CJSF 90.1 FM. So Dr. Ho, tell me a little about yourself and your history.
I came to Vancouver in 1990, and I studied traditional Chinese medicine since 1980 to 1985 in Shanghai University of Traditional Chinese Medicine. So since I came to Canada in 1990, I spent 1 year to learn English language, then after that, I started to teach and practice Chinese medicine until today.
What benefits do you see in Chinese medicine?
The benefits of traditional Chinese medicine is not just the treating the disease. We play a big role in the preventative medicine as well.
Could you talk a little more about the nature of Chinese medicine as a preventative medicine, possibly?
The preventative side of Chinese medicine maybe came in two big areas. Number one is how to prevent one to become sick, meaning that you probably need to have a good lifestyle and a balanced way of living, both mentally and physically, to keep your health as much as you can. The other area of preventative medicine will be to prevent the organs which is not yet diseased, you know, keep them as balanced as possible. That's another area of preventative.
What led you to become a doctor? Why did you become a doctor?
This is a good question. You know, for me personally, it's not a huge planning to become a doctor of Chinese medicine. You know, after high school in China at that time, you need to go through university entry exams. So at that time, I thought medicine is something which can benefit oneself and other people. I just thought it's a good thing to learn.
When you were younger, was traditional Chinese medicine a common part of your community?
Well, as I said earlier, I grew up in China, and of course, traditional Chinese medicine, it is a medicine, but it's also a culture and also a way of life. Of course, when we're younger, you know, and at home, you hear all these food cures, you know, how to use food to improve your health, how to treating some illness or disease using herbs. So it's part of growing up, I guess.
Could you describe your experience studying Chinese medicine?
I started to learn Chinese medicine when I was 18. It's right after the high school, which mainly you study science in high school. I think the switch from science to traditional Chinese medicine was kind of drastic to me. So in the beginning, especially the first 3 years, I actually had doubts and a question about whether this is something that I really want to learn and it's scientific enough for me to carry on. But due to the fact that in China at that time, it's not so easy you can change university or even your subjects. So I forced to carry on for the 5 years. But really, after the first 3 years, once I get into a clinical part of study, which means you do clinic observation and the practice in the hospital, I was amazed by the effects of this medicine and how it can help people in such a non-harm way. That's when my interests really started.
When did you get licensed?
Again, as I mentioned earlier, I started to practice Chinese medicine in Vancouver since 1991. At that time, actually, there was no policy and the regulations set by the government yet. I think about 10 years later, after I practiced in Vancouver, then the regulation came. At that time, I think back, it's about 15 years ago. And I was grandparented into the license. So since then, I hold my license.
Why did you decide to move to Canada after finishing your university studies in traditional Chinese medicine?
Things come to you in life, right? Opportunities come and it goes. I think I was in Japan studying more Western medicine and Chinese medicine. But opportunity came. I have a relative that wanted to sponsor me here to come in Vancouver. That's how I get moved to Vancouver.
So how long have you been working for the International College of Traditional Chinese Medicine, Vancouver?
I joined International College of Traditional Chinese Medicine in 1991. So that means 25 years of involvement in the college here.
How has it been?
It's been challenging and rewarding at the same time.
Could you talk a little bit about the challenges that you faced working at the college?
I think because TCM is such an old medicine, but yet it's so new to Western country 25 years ago. So we had to do a lot of the public educations to recruit students. And the other thing is, the students coming to school, they think they're prepared in terms of a different concept and a way of thinking, but in fact, they're not ready. So a lot of the initial education was very, very time-consuming and with a lot of difficulties. So it was not an easy 25 years in terms of deliver the message to the younger people or people who like to practice Chinese medicine easily. The rewarding is now you're seeing there's thousands of students over the last 25 years graduated from our school, and they go out and have a successful practice, and they are helping the general public to dealing with their illness and maintain their health. This is such a rewarding feelings for me.
In what capacities have you served at the college?
I studied as an instructor, then I quickly involved in the academic planning and develop curriculums. Then I also involved with a lot of other regular administration. Right now, I am the principal of the college.
What does that job involve you doing?
I think I carry many different aspects of responsibilities. I still look after a lot of academics, how to alternating and update our curriculums. I also dealing with a lot of government and the regulations, for example, PCTIA, CTCMA, try to keep up with all these newer regulations. And in the college itself, I still try to help students to solve their study issues and give them suggestions of how to take courses and also how to balance their study and the life.
What challenges do you face these days as principal of the college?
I think the challenge is always the same. You know, you try to make sure that students come to school and we want them to get their license as smooth as possible. But sometimes I feel students are focused too much on just the license exam. And I really wish that they can be a more open-minded, not just aim at the license level, but to become a great, knowledgeable, balanced, ethical practitioners in the future.
What changes have you seen in the college since you first started working here?
Well, there's many, many different changes since 25 years ago. The easier to see is the size. When I started in the school here, we probably have a total of 8 students. And now the school is growing. And I think at the highest point that we had about 170 to about 200 students in the school. So it's growing really, really fast.
Are there any other changes you would like to talk about?
And also curriculum has changed a lot too. The program used to be a 3-year program to Doctor of Traditional Chinese Medicine. Since the CTCMA, which is the regulatory bodies, the program is being extended to 5 years study as a Doctor of Traditional Chinese Medicine. So a lot of changes happened, but the essence is not. We're still passionate about teaching Chinese medicine.
Besides the introduction of the 5-year schedule to become a TCM practitioner, are there any other pieces of regulation or policy that have changed the way you run things or the way students study at your college?
I think in that area it's not too much of a change. I think the core curriculum always stay the same. I have to mention that other than the 5-year Doctor of Chinese program, and there's also a 3-year acupuncturist program and a 3-year of herbalist program. Really, I don't think the core curriculum has been changed that much.
Are there any significant events in the history of the college that you were part of that you want to talk about?
This school, just like a person, you know, it's grown from 25 years ago until today. It has to be a lot of changes happened. But really, if you are the person yourself, and you can't really tell exactly what changed. It's just so natural day after day, you know, you work hard, you're helping people, you're struggling, and you move on. I cannot really tell the huge event that happened. Everything, I think we were lucky enough. We had the growing pain, but we grew up. You know, we started small, but we become a little bigger now. Lately, the biggest change is the donation of the school to the foundation. Dr. Henry Liu owned the school in the past 30 years. I joined the school 5 years later after he established the school. As of December 31st, 2015, he donated the school to the foundation and wished the foundation will carry on with this good teaching institution to spreading traditional Chinese medicine in the Western world. It's the Zhuji Foundation in Canada.
Could you tell me more about the recent donation of the college to Zhuji Canada?
The donation part of the school, actually the idea started about 4 years ago. Dr. Liu was actively looking for a foundation to receive the gift of the school. And eventually we found the Zhuji Foundation is probably one of the best choice because their mission statements is very much like ours, to promote TCM, to produce well-educated and ethical TCM doctors for the future and so on. So 4 years ago, we approached the foundation and I tried to get to know them better. In the last 4 years, because of the learning, the situations, like we want to know the foundation more, and in fact, I also received the trainings from Tsuji Foundation and eventually become a member of the foundation. And the school was officially donated to the foundation December 31st, 2015.
Why did Dr. Henry Liu and you want to donate the college?
I think we have different options to the school as a business. We could sell them. We had people approach us to buy our school. We can also just close it down, but we all can also donate. We waited the different situations. We think the bottom line is we want to TCM education to become sustainable. We want them to still be growing and developing after Dr. Liu's retirement or after our lifetime. We still want to see that the school will continue. We believe this education is not a personal business. It should be a societal business.
Did you become a member of the Buddhist Tsuji Foundation after you learned more about them?
Yes, I did. After I get to know the foundation, I appreciate their mandate and what they did in the past all over the world to help people. It's just fascinating to me to see an organization can do so much in the world. So, of course, I accepted the chance of learn and being trained as an official member. I got my official member last year, actually.
What is Tsuji's primary interest in the college?
I think if you know the Tsuji Foundation, they have four main areas to be focused. One is the charity, the other is medicine, humanity, culture as well, you know. And I think Tsuji probably can accept the school donation and then make the medicine part much more a practice for them as a foundation.
Is Tsuji further interested in traditional Chinese medicine in Vancouver? And are there any other efforts that you know of?
Again, if you know the foundation of Tsuji, it started in Taiwan. They already have 6 general hospitals in Taiwan, so they are strongly a medicine-based foundation. In the hospitals, they all have traditional Chinese medicine department. So to have TCM as a part of their organization in Vancouver is nothing new to them. And I think for our students, because of the strong medical background that Tsuji have in Taiwan, and I think it can really benefit our students to learn more, TCM in that area.
Was there any transition of leadership or staff?
The leadership and the staff members are remain the same. Nothing really changed in terms of administration and the leadership as of today. I think this is what they want for now. That's why they asked me to stay, to continuously lead the college.
Will there be any significant changes in direction or approach with Tsuji at the helm, so to speak?
Tsuji Foundation, I don't know if you know, they acquired a piece of land in South Canby area. They are going to build a facility that can host the college and also probably a larger clinic which can treat people and also host a teaching clinic. So I think this is the plan in the future, maybe in the next 4 or 5 years, and that the school is going to have a new home in Canby and actually Marine Drive area.
I heard that Tsuji is planning to have a closer relationship with the communities of First Nations people in Vancouver. Some initiatives include scholarships for Native students to study traditional Chinese medicine. If you know anything about this, could you tell me more about these upcoming programs?
Yes, I was involved in some of the initiatives of helping the First Nation Aboriginal people in Sumas and also in downtown east side. So in the last few years that we established some charity and the free clinics in these areas to help people who are in need of treatments. And in the future, I think we want to probably explore more and to see if we also can get our students involved in such a project to get more involved in the community and help people who need more help.
Do you know when the Tzu Chi Foundation and the college might start the scholarships for Native students?
I think this is already in our agenda. We had a couple of meetings about this, and we just need to find the right community, First Nation tribes to start with. Because to study Chinese medicine, or especially to be licensed, we need the students to have a minimum of 2 years of university trainings. And we are not 100% sure yet where we can approach such a community that they already have, young people who have 2 years university and are interested to learn Chinese medicine.
And that was an interview with Dr. Lina Ho.
And that was our segment on traditional Chinese medicine. Thanks to Chris Spangenberg for that interview. Very interesting series, really digging into and explaining the practice of traditional Chinese medicine, which has now been, it's actually a number of years ago now, but officially recognized by the BC medical system and covered by many treatments are covered by the MSP service. So, very interesting. You have another song to play for us, Carolyn?
Yes. It's by a German artist called Schmidt. He started his career in a band that he apparently split from in 2020, I believe, and he started his solo career ever since. And the song is called Keiner von den Quarterbacks. Hope you enjoy.
Hab in der Schule immer eingesteckt, immer gejagt, so lange bis die Luft nach Eisen schmeckt. Keiner von den Quarterbacks, er die Leiche, die von Smalltalk feuchte Hände kriegt. Sind die Geister und Zombies vielleicht mein Team? Ja. Vielleicht sind Schmerzen Kerosin und wir beide morgen einfach nicht mehr hier. Schwarz löscht jedes Licht. Ich trete auf die Straße, die Sonne erlischt. Ja, können sie nicht mehr sehen, optimierte Gesichter. Trägst du da Goldkette oder ist das ein Strick? Ja, ich trag die Falten mit Stolz und die Namen hier an. Das Herz immer links und die Birne im Orbit. Ich mag die Risse in den schicken Fassaden. Meine Sneaker dreckig und die in im Faltwind. Ich glaub, die Geister und Zombies, sie sind mein Team, ja. Die Nase blutet Kerosin. Ich glaub, ich bin morgen nicht mehr hier. Den Weg in die Ruine.
ist der Song Keiner von den Quarterbacks, performed by Schmidt, German artist. Ja.
Excellent. Well, thanks. This has been a good show today. We do have a few minutes left. We'll probably play another song or something. But you do have some interviews you're working on for future programs.
Yes, I do. Next week, I will meet someone from the Renfrew Ravine Festival. Yep. And hopefully he's telling me a little bit about that, how that's going. I think it's been on since September 9th, actually.
Excellent.
And
sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
And I think the next big festival happening in Vancouver is the Vancouver International Film Festival. We just finished the Fringe Festival, and we talked to the fine folks from, what was the name of the play again? I have it.
The Immigrants?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as I say, next thing coming up is the Vancouver International Film Festival, and we here at CJSF will be doing a bunch of coverage of that. You're lining up an interview.
Yes. I'm just getting
set for that, and that may be next week or the week after, coming in this time slot on Tuesday morning. And a whole bunch of CJSF volunteers and programmers will be getting out to attend all sorts of film festival presentations, and they'll be coming back here to tell you folks at home all about what they've seen and hopefully have some recommendations for you. And you can find that on the morning Speak Up shows, on the art show on Thursday at 5, and throughout the schedule, as people will be talking about on their other shows too. Yeah. So film festival is always an exciting thing to get out to. And I guess... Well, it's, you know, the film festival in Vancouver doesn't quite have as many stars as the Toronto Film Festival does. And this year, I guess, we'll have even fewer with the writers and actors strikes. But we'll still be having producers and directors coming to talk about their films. So it should be a pretty exciting time. Thanks for tuning in today. My name is Magnus.
I'm Caroline.
And we'll be back next week with more great new content for you here on CJSF 90.1 FM.
To listen to? Want to know about up-and-coming artists, albums, and more? Well, come hang out with me every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Raccoon City's where I'll be. Hope to see you there.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As seas rise and weather becomes more extreme, many communities are investing in flood prevention projects. Some are creating rain gardens or other green spaces that absorb and hold water. Others are restoring coastal dunes that can help protect inland areas. These projects can be expensive, so Tess Deffinger of the University of Alabama says that as cities weigh the pros and cons, it's important to realize that flood prevention can do more than just protect property. For example, reducing flooding also helps protect people's health and well-being.
There's a reduced chance of disease outbreak after a storm or a flood event. Just even that extra sense of safety, so mentally, psychologically, having that there can also help.
Deffinger encourages communities to design projects that help residents in other ways, too.
Could you add in an additional recreation area, like as a buffer between the river and the city, like a city walk, things like that, that could actually add some additional space for the city for people to use?
She says talking about and designing for these co-benefits can help engage residents and attract investors. And their support can help ensure that critical flood prevention projects get done. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Western Front will be hosting the Took Craft Fair from December 1st to 3rd. It will showcase a curated selection of BC-based artists, craftspeople, and designers who make textiles, ceramics, jewelry, accessories, stationery, and home and body products. The event is all about coming together, meeting artists and connecting with what is being made in our community. If you are interested in participating